Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today as we begin the program by taking a look at science, science and society. And Bassam Shakashiri, our guest, back once again. Seems like a long time since he was last on. Maybe it hasn't been that long, but seems like it anyway. He's professor of chemistry at the UW-Madison, and he is also the 2012 president of the American Chemical Society. And the American Chemical Society, if I'm not mistaken, is the largest professional society in the world. So it's quite an honor, and he's on the road a lot, I'm sure, for fulfilling the responsibilities of being president, and in fact is with us by phone today. So we're great. It's great to have him by phone. Certainly we'd love to hear from you as we talk about science. Are you a science geek? Where do you get your love of science from? Did you pursue science as a hobby or a profession? Maybe what inspired you? What about your kids? Do you encourage them to explore science, and how do you do that? Those are all things we can talk about, and certainly I'm sure Bassam would have comments on any question you might raise with him. Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org, or go to my Facebook page. You can post there at The Larry Mueller Show, and we'd love to hear from you. And Bassam, are you with us?
I'm here, Larry. Thank you so much for having me on the program this morning. You are not mistaken about two things. It has been a long time since I've been on your show. It's because of my very extensive travel schedule. And we have great opportunities to address important societal needs. You know, science is a contributor to addressing these issues. And but I'm very pleased that I am on your program again. And yes, the American Chemical Society is the largest scientific organization in the world. We have over 164,000 members all over the country, or all over the world, in fact. And my responsibilities as president this year do take me away from Madison, but I love Madison. I love our state. I am committed as a Wisconsin faculty member. This is my 42nd year, Larry, as a faculty member.
Oh.
I am very proud of that achievement. People in the listening audience can do the arithmetic. The university is over 160 years old, so they can do the arithmetic and see it's a substantial fraction.
Yeah.
Our university plays an important role in the well-being of our state, actually in the well-being of the nation, and has made, continues to make many contributions around the world in advancing science, communicating science, educating people, and serving society. And it is such a great honor for me to be a faculty member at Wisconsin and president of the American Chemical Society. Especially this year, Larry, this is the sesquicentennial of the Land-Grant Act.
Yes, the Morrill Act.
The Morrill Act. The Morrill Act has transformed America. And in Wisconsin, we celebrate accomplishments. We look back. We glance in the rearview mirror to see what we have done, but we also are poised to do more. So we're engaged in a retrospective and a prospective approach to our university and our role in the state and across the country. You know, I posted on my website, Larry, I don't know if you've had a chance to look at it, a select number of accomplishments, outstanding accomplishments from Wisconsin that relate to the Morrill Act of 1862. And if people just go to my website, that you'll see it right near the top on the front page. And my website is scifun.org, scifun.org. It's not only from what Professor Babcock has done, but Frederick Jackson Turner, University Without Boundaries, you know, the Wisconsin idea, vitamin A, vitamin B, vitamin D, warfarin.
Amazing.
The Social Security Act has its origin in Wisconsin. And then, of course, Harry Harlow's contributions. My former department chair, Farrington Daniels, who did research on solar energy in the 1950s. Werner Sumi and his contributions to weather satellites. Howard Temin and his research in biochemistry. The list goes on and on and on. Jamie Thompson. And, of course, you know, we have a number of outstanding colleagues in the sciences and across the campus engaged in scholarly activities aimed at improving the quality of life in our state and across the nation around the world. And some of them, as I say, are listed on the website. So I welcome people visiting the website, learning more about our great heritage, and more importantly, about the promise that we have to serve society through advances in science and technology and through our role as an institution of higher education. Mm.
You know, Diane from East Dubuque, Illinois, is online with a question for you, and I think it relates really well to what we're talking about. So let's go there. Diane, thank you for calling.
Well, thank you for taking my call. My question is how the higher education institutions are working with even the K-12 system to arouse curiosity and give students a better interest early on in science, because I know that they are coming to the community colleges and the colleges ill-prepared in math and also in science. And I'm finding so many kids take easier courses, and I think their lack of curiosity may be causing that.
Hmm.
Are you doing anything to create curriculum that would help teachers in that regard?
Well, thank you, Diane, for your question and for your comments. Let me just say that very quickly, because I really believe in kids of all ages are curious. The youngsters express their curiosity less abashedly than the rest of us. I mean, they're very uninhibited about it. It is very important to take advantage of the great offerings that institutions of higher education offer to the school systems, to the communities where they exist. This is true not only of public institutions but private institutions. This is true of community colleges. This is true of four-year colleges, of research universities. There's a wealth of information and a strong commitment to provide motivation and inspiration to youngsters and to their families and to their teachers. And there is a richness of information on websites, including the University of Wisconsin website and other institutions as well. What's really important to me is to establish meaningful, good connections between the institutions and the K-12 educational systems. It is very important to have quality material in our curriculum. It is very important that the teachers be well prepared and enabled by their administrators, by their community, to do the very best we know how in our teaching, because the youngsters are so curious and they ask questions, all kinds of questions that relate to observations that they make, and that we must be responding and nurturing the curiosity that youngsters have. And this is not only a school responsibility. Parents are very important. And so in many of the activities that we do at the Wisconsin Initiative for Science Literacy, we include parents in those activities. Parental engagement is as important as having youngsters be engaged. So you're right, Diane, that matters related to the curriculum, matters related to challenges in the coursework that is offered, matters related to what happens outside the school are also important. Learning takes place around the clock. It's not only during that one period of science that a student might be in. Science is all around us. We are the beneficiaries of great advances in science that we must learn about and we must take advantage of, and learn also how to contribute to further advancing the quality of life in our communities.
Hmm.
Could I just ask a quick, are
sure.
there any summer camps that deal with science rather than just sports and crafts?
Mm-hmm.
There are summer camps, yes. There are actually some in the chemistry department at UW-Madison. If you go to the chemistry department website, you go to my website, siphon.org, and look under events of interest. You'll see a link to some of the activities that are taking place in Madison, and there are many others in Madison, too. But I strongly urge you and everyone else in the listening audience to take advantage of what's available to you locally. There are many outstanding offerings in your immediate vicinity, and you can find out about them by contacting the institution of higher education that's closest to you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for calling, Diane. And related to that, we had a Facebook comment from Dave, who says, with more than half the world being populated by women, is it wise that the gap between the number of women versus men in engineering and science be allowed to persist today? I think not. As our technological world develops, it's imperative that this gap be eliminated and that girls and women be encouraged to participate in these important disciplines.
Of course, it is very important that we get rid of this gap. Demographics are such that enrollment data show us that women are the majority of students now. Is that true in terms of teachers and faculty at institutions of higher education? No, it isn't. So that's the gap that I think we should be paying attention to. We are paying attention to it. We need to break the glass ceiling. We need to continue to work hard to take full advantage of the talented women, young girls, adults, established scientists, established educators, established professionals who can make and are making great contributions to our society. This is something that is of special interest to the Wisconsin Initiative for Science Literacy, and we do have a program on women in science as one of our activities, and you can find out more about it by, again, visiting our website, scifund.org.
And we have that. We have a link to that, to your website, on my Facebook page. So I hope people, if you're on my Facebook page, you can just go there and click on that link, and there you go.
Larry, may I say something about related to this last question?
Sure.
And today in society and in science, we have big challenges. Our biggest challenge is to help sustain the Earth and its people in the face of population growth, finite resources, malnutrition, spreading disease, deadly violence, climate change, and the denial of basic human rights, especially the right to benefit from scientific and technological progress. These are grand challenges which we must face. We must not only address them in scientifically, but we must address them as a society. And I believe strongly that science and society have what is essentially a social contract that enables great intellectual achievement, which is what we do when we do scientific research. But this comes also with mutual expectations of benefiting and advancing the human condition and protecting our planet. We just had Earth Day a week ago yesterday. It's a celebration of the magnificent planet that we live on. Our former Governor Gaylord Nelson and U.S. Senator Gaylord Nelson started this in 1970. We are the stewards. We are the custodians of planet Earth. And it's very important for us to understand all the different ramifications of the advances we've had in science and in technology since the Industrial Revolution, understand that they have benefited us, but they've also created issues that affect the climate. And I choose that as the one target of the many challenges I just mentioned here, because it is very important for youngsters and their parents to understand that we can do better than what we're doing as a society if we pay attention to what it is that our advances are helping us accomplish and also the problems that they're creating for us.
We have more callers online. Chris and Verona, we'll get to you in just a second. But just a reminder, we're talking science and society today with Bassam Shakashiri, president of the American Chemical Society professional organization. He's also a professor of chemistry at UW-Madison. Give us a call with your questions at 1-800-642-1234, email at talk@wpr.org. Or go to our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, and you can post a question or a comment there. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking science today with Professor Bassam Shakashiri. Chris in Verona up next. Chris, hi. Thank you for calling.
Thanks for taking my call. Hi, Bassam. I actually was a teaching assistant for you in 1993 in the spring semester for Chem 103.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm always happy to hear both from former students from and former teaching assistants and colleagues. Yes, Chris?
Yeah, so I have a degree in chemistry from UW-Madison, and before having children, worked in the pharmaceutical industry. And I got my love of science from my father, who passed away in 2003. He was a professor of biochemistry at UW Oshkosh, Robert Moore. And you're absolutely right. Science doesn't happen 1 hour in a classroom or one period a week. I got my love of science from just the day-to-day interactions and talking about how things work and how the world around us works. And that's what I'm hoping to share with my children.
Well, I hope you are also telling other people in your immediate community, just as you are now on the radio, Chris. And yes, science helps us understand the beautiful, complex world that we live in. Science is opens our minds. It enlightens us. It also gives us an awesome responsibility to care about the consequences of these advances that we make as a society. And of course, Chris, I'm sure you agree with this. If you don't, please say so, that science is not the answer to all the questions that we have. Science deals with certain domains of life. Science is a human endeavor, but it does not encompass everything that we deal with in life. And so it's important to learn about the purpose of scientific inquiry, the results of scientific inquiry, and how they affect us, but also be mindful that creativity and innovation are adventures of the mind that also work in scientific but also non-scientific domains.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. Science is wonderful, but it does have its limits. I see we're pushing the limits every day in different fields, but it just shows us how much more there is out there that's unexplained.
Yeah, absolutely. Chris, thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it very much. And Gary in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, turning to you next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Sure.
My question to you is if you could make a comment on the recent advancements that have been made in the field of cold fusion and low-energy nuclear reactions. It seems there's a lot of information online about some research, some really exciting research and developments in the field.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Did you say cold fusion?
Yes.
Yes. So this is not so much a controversial area in science anymore. The cold fusion has not been validated or established scientifically. It doesn't mean that we should not look into it. It does mean, though, that whatever we have found so far has not yielded what the claims have said. And that gives me an opportunity to say something about information that we find on the Internet. The Internet is a very useful source of information, but it is not all necessarily valid information. We have to exercise judgment when we look at something on the Internet. We have to look at the source. We have to look whether or not it has been validated. You know, in scientific publications, we have a system. It's called peer review system. Someone makes a discovery after a certain involvement in research and so on, and they submit their findings to a scientific journal, and they are then the findings are subjected to review before they are published. And even after they're published, we look at them, we study them, we challenge them, we are skeptical of them. So that's the scientific process. That's the nature of how we make progress in science, by being skeptical. And so that's what I'm asking you, to be thoughtful and skeptical about information that you find on the Internet.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Kurt in Chippewa Falls, on to you now. Hi, Kurt.
Good morning. Dr. Bashir, like you, I am enormously proud of our Wisconsin university system. And I've been watching over the last 20, 30 years and becoming increasingly concerned over the growing role of private corporate funding of both the basic and applied research, and perhaps even in the classroom. And I'm wondering if it's too late to reverse that trend of increasing corporate direction of our public university.
Mm-hmm. Kurt, may I ask you, say a bit more about the concern that you have? Is it a concern about what the level of support, that the corporations are not giving us enough support? Is it a concern about something else?
With the funding and support comes strings are attached. It seems to me that the corporations have an expectation of what will serve their purposes, and I first became aware of this back in the 80s with the bovine growth hormone, the somatotropin funding of research, and was finding out that some of the corporations involved in dairy agribusiness were seriously discouraging publication of research that indicated less than some deleterious effects of bovine somatotropin on continued use on cows. So it's there. It's the corporate control and direction that comes with the funding. Take all the money you want, but how do you do that without taking orders?
I understand your point, and it's a very important point that we always pay attention to. Let me assure you, on behalf of my colleagues at the University of Wisconsin and elsewhere, that the grants that are received by us to engage in scientific research have no strings attached to them. These grants are given through public federal funds, funding agencies, also from the state and from the private sector, with a clear-cut understanding that the research is to be conducted in an open fashion and that the results will be published openly, subject to peer review, as I was mentioning before. It doesn't mean that there aren't private interests that would like to do some things along the lines that you were describing, but as we form a partnership with the private sector, that is, we being in the research and educational enterprises, we have to be very mindful of the point that you are raising here. Because what it really boils down to is it's a question of integrity. It's a question of the integrity of the research and the educational processes that we're engaged in. And if they are to be controlled and influenced with strings attached, as you have mentioned, then that is not in keeping with what we do at our institutions of higher education. Research in the private sector has its purposes, and it's done in private laboratories. But when we are engaged in open inquiry, when we are engaged in pursuing ideas and looking at research projects. We have no boundaries put on us in terms of what directions we pursue or what findings we might come up with. We have to be responsible in terms of what we discover, in terms of sharing it, and we share it openly.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And I want to give Mark in La Crosse a chance to join in, too. Mark, hi.
Hello, Larry, and hello, Professor.
Hi, Mark.
My love of science, a lot of it comes from, you know, public television and television in general. And one thing I really love is the wonderful show you put on at Christmas time and how much I look forward to that every year. And I just want to say thank you. And
thank you, Mark.
I'll take your comments off the air.
Thank you so much. It is one of our many avenues of trying to share the joy of science, the joy of inquiry, the challenges of that we encounter in science with everyone in society. So the program Once Upon a Christmas Cheery in the Lab of Shaka Sheri, which we do in the tradition of the great British scientist Michael Faraday, that's done in December. And by the way,
you have a big one coming up in June.
We have a Science is Fun extravaganza coming up on June 25th at 5:30 p.m. It'll be in the chemistry building, the very same location where we offer the Christmas lecture. It's free and open to the public, but we would like to ask people who are interested in attending to go to our website and find out how they can sign up for it, because the capacity of the facility is limited. We don't want people to show up and not be able to find a seat there. So June 25th at 5:30 p.m. in the chemistry building at UW-Madison, please go to our website, scifun.org, scifun.org, where you'll find information about reserving a spot for you to come and participate in Science is Fun, the science of fireworks, learn about the science of fireworks, learn about glowing liquids, exploding balloons, all kinds of fun and challenging scientific safe experiments that we will do. So thank you, Mark, for your comment, and we hope to see you there if you have a chance. It's summertime in Madison is pleasant.
Yeah, very, very pleasant. So it's going to be kind of similar then to your Christmas program.
It is similar. Santa Claus will not be there.
Okay.
But we might have other guests there. We will have other guests there. And we always try to engage the senses, you know, of youngsters, yeah, and the adults that are with them.
Rick and Shano, turning to you now. Hi, Rick.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question for Dr. Pham, partly because I have a hard time pronouncing his last name, but I listen so often I feel like I know him personally. Anyway, I always enjoy his conversation and your show, Larry, too.
Thank you.
My question is that objective research, is there such a thing? I challenge that there even is truly objective research. We are very subjective, emotional people. The questions that are predetermined, we are not even aware of the framework that allows us to come up with the questions. And I think that I'm following up on one of the previous callers asking about the strings attached to research. Well, those strings may not be obvious, but I think subtly our environment, our society, our whole, you know, where we're at is determining what it is. And so I doubt that there is such a thing as objective research.
Well, you know, thank you, Rick, for raising this this point. And I appreciate what you said about listening to Larry's show and to me when I'm on it. So let me say very, very quickly that one of the most difficult things we do in scientific explorations is to learn how to formulate the question, how to ask the question. What we're trying to deal with here is learn more. We're trying, in a very good sense, to combat ignorance. And so we ask questions. We're curious. Nobody dictates, nobody has, let me be personal about this, no one has dictated to me whether or not I should ask a question as to why the sky is blue, or why do the leaves change color in the fall, and what are the mechanisms for those color changes. We are, as human beings, a curious species. We're always asking questions. Of course, as a result of asking these questions, we learn, and the more we learn, the more we discover how little we know. So we keep asking questions, but there is also a responsibility that we have as we learn more to share this knowledge, not only through communication, but through applications. So the interplay between scientific advances and technological applications is very, very important. This is why we live now in the most scientifically and technologically advanced society in the history of humankind, because our ancestors and predecessors asked questions and came up with answers, and then there was a transfer of the knowledge and applications were made so that we benefited from the discoveries that were made. This does not in any way negate the responsibility that we have in terms of being careful so that we do not engage in activities, intellectual activities or any other kinds of activities with strings attached that divert us from the mission that we have, which is to be engaged in open inquiry.
Thank you, Rick, so much for calling. I appreciate your call. And still have a little bit of time for you to join in at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. A rock star scientist is featured at UW-Madison's inaugural Senior Day on Thursday, May 10th. Astrophysicist Neil deGrasse Tyson. And Bassam, like you, he really works to make science accessible and even sexy.
He's a very good speaker. I wish I would be in Madison to be in the audience there. By all means, if you can attend, and people have watched him on television, and he's just outstanding. And we're so fortunate in Wisconsin. We not only have our own people, but we also get guests from the outside. You know, speaking of our own people, Larry, your next guests, the weather guys,
yep.
They're very, very good at the science and the sharing of science of the weather that they go through your program. In fact, I commend you, Larry, for having so many different guests on your program that deal with science, deal with education. It is in keeping with the Wisconsin idea. And thank you, Larry, for doing that.
Well, you know, as you say, science is fun. And it's fun to learn about it and what's going on with it. So we're really glad to do it. And we have, I believe, a former student of yours online. I want to go to Allison in Green Bay. Allison, hi. Thank you for calling.
Good morning, Madison.
Good morning.
Yes. Hello, Professor Shakashuri. This is one of your first students, spring of 1971 calling.
My goodness. That was the second year second year after I joined the faculty. I'm happy to hear from you.
Yes, well, I was all charged up. I figured if I took chemistry, I would know how to fix the environment. My question is pollution credits. We have a situation, this city in Wisconsin has risen as most polluted, and there's a thing called pollution credits, and earlier in the program you were discussing the social responsibility. Is it knowing what we do about the consequences of air pollution and the effects on developing children and so forth? I'm wondering how scientists might get information to elected officials or whoever, or to the private sector on pollution credits. Apparently, if you have some left over from a lesser polluted factory in another corner of the state, you can apply them towards this section.
Well, you bring up an important point that relates to the role of science and technology in our economy. So when we make new discoveries and we learn that some processes that we have been using and have benefited us are contributing to pollution, we have to make sure that we are economically responsible as well. So these trade-offs and caps that we hear about are mechanisms that have been put in place at the state level, nationally and internationally, to help us move in the right direction to reduce pollution and at the same time not completely destroy economically viable processes that have been in place. So you can't just turn off the spigot on pollution immediately. This is why we have EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency. This is why we have DNR in Wisconsin and other states, to help not only through regulation, but to understand what the consequences are of the different acts and actions that we engage in. So there are these trade-offs, as you say. But in the long run, we must fully understand and appreciate how well off we are now compared to our ancestors and how big our responsibility is to be stewards of the environment and to be stewards of the communities where we live. And so that will include what you mentioned about trade-offs here and there and so on. But we always have to be mindful of advancing science and serving society. We advance science through the research, through education, through innovation, and then we serve society by being careful with the applications of our scientific findings.
And thank you very much, Allison, for calling. But Sam, thank you so much for being with us. I know you had a busy guy now, traveling all over the world pretty much, aren't you?
Yes, I am. And it's in keeping with my responsibility as a UW-Madison faculty member. Thank you, Larry, for having me on the program. I promise to come more often, even if we do it by telephone as we did today.
All right. And say hi to June and Elizabeth for me.
I will. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. Bassam Shakashiri, our guest, a professor of chemistry at UW-Madison, current president of the American Chemical Society. It's quite an honor to be named president of that society, believe me. And as we were talking, it's the largest professional science society in the world. And he presides over it right now. And coming up, a couple guys that preside over our weather, or at least try to preside over our weather a little bit. Steve Ackerman and John Martin, our weather guys, coming up next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.